Our speaker this morning is a man that I've grown to love in the Lord and appreciate his ministry from the first time that I met him. A year ago, he resigned the fastest growing and largest independent church in the state of Georgia, running 3,000 in Sunday school, winning souls, baptizing, reaching many people for Christ. And God spoke to his heart and called him into the work of evangelism. And in that year, he's been going across America, preaching the gospel, and scores of people have been saved. It's our joy to present to you, from Atlanta, Georgia, Dr. Curtis Hudson.
I share with you this morning one text from the book of Psalms. Psalm 33 is verse 12. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people whom he hath chosen for his own inheritance. And I want to speak this morning on that one word, America. I must confess that as an evangelist, I sometimes have difficulty preaching appropriate sermons for occasions like this. I'm evangelistic. My tendency is to preach on "you must be born again" or John 3:16. But on special occasions, I think it's appropriate and right that we think about our country. Life is not divided into the secular and sacred. All ground is holy ground, and every bush is a burning bush. It's just as Christian when you go into the voting booth and vote as it is when you drop your tithe in the offering plate on Sunday morning. It's just as Christian to observe the laws of our land and obey them as it is to sing in the choir on Sunday morning. The Bible says, whatsoever you do in word or deed, do all for the glory of Christ. I think we sometimes try to divide life into the secular and sacred, and we should not make such a division. We talk of full-time Christian service. We all, everybody who's a Christian ought to be in full-time Christian service. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year until Jesus comes for us. I want to say three things about America this morning. I want to talk briefly and just speak briefly on the greatness of America. And then I want to try to attempt to explain why America is great as I speak about the God of America. Then lest you think I think this is a perfect country, I'd like to close by commenting somewhat about the guilt of America. I've never traveled in many foreign countries, but reading and observing and listening, I do not think there's a greater country in the world than the United States of America. It hasn't always been a great country. There's a reason it is great. It's the richest country in the world. God has blessed us bountifully here in America. We have our mistakes. We have our faults, but the greatest country in the world is America. God has given us wonderful natural resources in this country. Practically every commodity that man uses can be found in America. In her fields, every crop is grown. From her trees, every fruit and wood is secured. From her mines comes every mineral that man uses. And upon her prairies is found every meat that is good for food. I don't know of a country in the world that produces more food than the United States of America. I just left the state of Iowa, big farm country. I guess the richest soil in the world is where I was this past week in Iowa. The great corn fields and the soybean fields, mile after mile after mile. I had lunch every day with a different farmer. And all those farmers have 3 and 4 and 5 big air-conditioned tractors. It's unbelievable the progress they've made in this country. God has given us wonderful natural resources, but God has also given us bountiful natural beauties. Every type of scenery that can be found in the world can be found in America. When they talk about the beautiful coast of the Mediterranean, we can tell them of the Atlantic coastline and the Pacific and the Gulf shores. When they talk about the Danube and the beautiful rivers of Europe, we can tell them about the beautiful Ohio, the St. Lawrence, the mighty Mississippi, and the Colorado. When they speak of the mountains of Switzerland, we can point to the Alleghenies, the Adirondacks, the Smokies, and many others. When they talk to us about the interesting spots of the world, we can tell them about Niagara Falls, the beautiful Grand Canyon, the Yellowstone National Park, the Redwood Forest of California, Silver Springs down in Florida, and even Old Stone Mountain down in Georgia where I live. When I was a boy, there used to be a slogan that I think probably the government paid for to be advertised around the country. It was, "See America First. See America First." It's not bad advice. You can put all the scenery of all the world together and we can match it all right here in the good old United States of America. But God not only has given us bountiful natural resources and wonderful natural beauties in America, God has given us a good form of government in this country. We have a free democracy. In the years that the United States has been a nation, the government of every large nation on earth has changed. But America's government, despite the attacks upon it, is still the same. With the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America guarding our liberties, I would not change our form of government for the form of government of any country that has ever existed in the history of the world. But God has given us more in this country. God has given us freedom of speech and press. I think sometimes it may have been abused to make sure that we did not deprive anybody of their freedom of speech. But I can stand here in this pulpit this morning and say anything I want to say. And I have no fear of some policeman coming and carrying me away and imprisoning me. The editor of your paper here in Texas, Dallas or Fort Worth, can say what he wants to in his editorial column without the fear of being arrested and tried. That is not true in Russia. Now, this past week, two of our news reporters were locked up in Russia and are being tried for slander because they reported what Russia thinks was slanderous against their government there. You have to walk on eggshells in some countries. You don't have to walk on eggshells here. In Russia, the secret police will take a man off to a concentration camp, and only God knows what happens to him after that. But here we can speak what we please. Not only that, but God has given us religious freedom in America. Whatever your belief may be, no one can close your church. They even have homosexual churches now in America. I don't mean that I'm for them. I think it's sinful. I think it's wrong. But America is so broad that it gives religious freedom to anyone. I picked up a news magazine on the airplane last week flying over to Iowa. I forgot whether it was Newsweek or which one that it was. I didn't tear the article out. But I read of a church that really has no members and has no doctrine. Yet they're recognized and have tax exemptions. I think that probably religious freedom was abused in that particular instance. But on the other hand, I'm not against men having religious freedoms. I'm not against the homosexuals. I want you to understand. And really, I don't think some people understood Anita Bryant when she stood. She was not against the homosexuals having their rights, but She was against the homosexuals infringing upon her rights as a Christian. She said that we ought to have the right to have a Christian school here in the state of Florida, and not be compelled by our government to have to hire a homosexual to teach our fifth grade boys. She said nothing against them. She was standing up for her own rights when she said that. Billy Sunday used to say, a man comes walking down the street swinging his fist, and he says, it's a free country, I can swing my fist anywhere I please. And he said he keeps swinging his fist and gets nearer and nearer to me until his fist hits my nose. And then Billy Sunday, in his own unique way, said his personal liberty ends where my nose begins. And the homosexual's personal liberty ends where my nose begins. I ought to have the right in Atlanta, Georgia, to organize a Christian school and have in that school Christians who believe the Bible's the Word of God and believe in the fundamentals of the faith. And ought to have the right to say, I do not want a practicing or professing homosexual teaching my fifth or sixth grade boys. If they want to have a school, let them start their own school. They have that religious freedom in this country. I don't want you to think I'm for them. I think it's sinful and wrong and a perversion. And it's a result of men not recognizing God is God and not being thankful in their heart, and God turned them over to those things which were not convenient. But I'm just making a statement about our religious freedom in this country. I thank God for it. In Russia on May the 1st, 1937, Stalin issued this decree. He said, there must not remain in the territory of Soviet Russia a single house of prayer to God, and the very conception of God will be banished from the boundaries of Russia. That's not true here in America. You can start a church about anywhere you want to start it without too much difficulty. You have more difficulty now than you used to have, but there are churches springing up all over this country. Our religious freedom, but where do we get it? A humble Baptist preacher named Roger Williams, persecuted for his belief, fled to what is now known as Rhode Island. And there he founded the city of Providence. And when he wrote the Constitution for the state, he wrote, every man should be free to worship God according to the dictates of his own heart. And when Thomas Jefferson and others were forming the Constitution of the United States of America, they borrowed this principle and inserted it as a part of our great Constitution. But it came from a Baptist preacher who was persecuted for his religious belief and fled to Providence, or Rhode Island, and founded the city of Providence. Not only has God given us these things, but God has given us in our country the separation of church and state. I feel like I ought to park here for a moment because this is something that's been misunderstood. The separation of church and state simply means that we do not have a state church that we are compelled to support with our tax money. There is no church that is supported by our government. Separation of church and state does not mean that Christians are not to be involved in electing presidents and senators and congressmen and all the others. Every time I've ever endorsed a believer who ran for anything in the state of Georgia, some newspaper reporter always came out and said, separation of church and state, separation of church and state, and tried to force me in a position to be a second-class citizen. The man who heads up the liquor industry can endorse who he likes to. The man who heads up the pornography industry can endorse who he likes to. But if the local preacher says anything about a Christian running for public office, somebody screams separation of church and state. That is a wrong idea of what separation of church and state means. We are Christians, and we ought to be interested in who's elected in our country. I encourage our people when I was pastoring, find people who are good Christian people who will be governed by Bible principles and vote for those men. It has always been my advice to our people. Romans chapter 13 says, let every soul be subject to higher powers, because there's no power except it be ordained of God, and the powers that be are ordained of God. If that is true, that means that I am to be in subjection to higher powers no matter who holds the office. I may not have respect for the person, but I should have respect for the position. If the policeman stops me while I'm going down the road, he may not be as good a Christian as I am. He may be smoking and blowing cigar smoke in my face while he gives me a ticket. He may curse me as he pulls out his pad to write my ticket. But I still must take the ticket, because I am not taking the ticket because of his personality. I'm taking the ticket because of his position in the country. And have disrespect for him is to have disrespect for God. We're having a lot of trouble in this country because of the breakdown in law and order. And we don't respect the authority of people whom God has placed over us. A lot of this rebellion you see on the streets, those young people learned it in the homes of America, where a mother rebelled against her husband's authority, and the kids saw her rebel against her husband's authority, and they learned to rebel against authority in the home, and it carried over, and now they became criminals, and now they rebel against every law and ordinance of our state and of our country. God has given a separation of church and state, but I want you to understand, that doesn't mean you can't get interested and ask folks to vote for somebody you know is a good man that's running for office. We ought to be involved. If we don't get involved, we someday wish we had have gotten involved. May I say, God has given us, in addition to these wonderful things, a country where everybody has a chance. I could go on and on and on all morning telling you the people who came from seemingly nowhere and became a great success. I saw a poll the other day where they listed the name of five people who they thought had the greatest influence on America, and among the five was named Thomas Edison. I kept thinking, will he be named? Will he be named? Will he be named? Thomas Edison is responsible for 1,150 inventions which we enjoy in this country. Yet he was sent home from school one day with a note pinned to his back, keep this boy at home, he's too dumb to learn. But he did learn. When he was inventing the electric light bulb, he tried 700 things that failed. Can you imagine his persistence? Putting a bulb together, putting the power to it, it fizzled out. Put it together, put the power to it, it fizzled out. After 700 failures, a friend said, Mr. Edison, why don't you quit? You failed 700 times. And Thomas Edison looked up and said, I have not failed 700 times. I've discovered 700 things that won't work in a light bulb. He tried 9,000 things that failed when he invented the storage battery. But he kept on trying and kept on trying and kept on trying and kept on trying. And now he's become a household word across America. And the poll that I said saw recognize him as one of the five top people who's influenced America more than any other citizen of this country. Here's a boy, a poor boy from nowhere, and yet he had a chance in this country. You don't have to be an inventor to be successful in this country. I'm thinking now of the heavyweight prize fighter, Leon Spinks. Leon said his father would often beat him and say to him, you're no good, you'll never amount to anything. But Leon, as his father beat him and said, you'll never amount to anything, he made up his mind, I will amount to something. I'll do something. I don't know what I'll do, but I'll do something. In the last round of the fight, when he was fighting Muhammad Ali and coming on like a buzzsaw, if you saw the last round of the fight, Ali almost had him. He was hitting him with everything. It seemed like he couldn't get away. And he staggered. He's up against the ropes. I thought Ali's already pulled another one out. In a moment, he bounced away from the ropes and came back like a totally different person and hit him again like a wild tiger. When the fight was over, they said, "What was you thinking about when Ali had you against the ropes and you were almost out?" He said, "I remembered my father hanging me up and beating me and cursing me and saying, 'You'll never amount to anything. You'll never amount to anything.'" And he said, "I said, 'I will, I will, I will.'" America's a land of opportunity where anybody can achieve if they want to achieve. I've come 10,000 miles further than I ought to have ever come. I don't brag about my lack of education. But if anybody had ever told you that I'd be preaching here today, you would have thought they were fools. They call me Dr. Hudson. I look at that Dr. Hudson on that piece of paper. And the truth of the matter is, I never even finished high school. I do have a high school diploma, but only God and I knows how I got it. It's none of your business. I have an honorary Doctor of Divinity, and when they gave me that, I thought it qualified me to make candy. Another college, Hiles Anderson College, gave me a Doctor of Humanities, and it's abbreviated HUM period D, and when I saw it, I thought it stood for Humdinger. And yet I've crisscrossed America and preached in the largest churches in this nation. Last Mother's Day, I stood in the largest church in the United States of America, First Baptist Church in Hammond, Indiana. Over 25,000 present that Sunday morning. They met in the Civic Center, and when I preached, over 700 people came to trust Christ as Savior. At the close of the service, they baptized over 300 converts in the swimming pool underneath the Civic Center. That's how many they baptized on purpose. There may have been 25 falling accidentally, but they got that many on purpose. I preached in the largest churches in this country. I've come a million miles further than I would have ever come. But America is a land of opportunity. You can do most anything in this country if you have a little get up and go about you. If you have a little determination, a man can start on a shoestring and build a fortune in this country. And many have done it. I don't know of another country like this one. In 1800, somebody made a suggestion to close a patent office. In 1800, and they gave this explanation, "We should close a patent office because everything that can be invented has been invented." That's in 1800. Well, if they had closed it then, we wouldn't have automobiles, electric lights. I mean, everything we've got's been invented since then. May I say to America's the only large nation that's never lost a war. The last war we pulled out seemingly took a no-win policy. And we didn't win the war. I don't think we lost the war. Everybody's backed away, and we sort of turned those countries over to communists. It is sad what's happened in Cambodia since we've left, the hundreds of thousands of people that's been butchered there. They don't even waste the bullets on them now. They have them bend over a large ravine, and with sharp holes they hit them in the head like animals and kill them and push them over in the ravines. That never gets in your newspapers here. It never gets on your television set. But we didn't lose that war. America is the only large nation that's never lost a war. We have never in the history of America given up an inch of territory permanently except of our own free will. And the Star Spangled Banner is the only flag that has never stooped its proud head in defeat. God bless America. I'd like to suggest that God has blessed America. And I think America's been blessed because many people, when they sing that song, do not sing it because of the rhyme, but they sing it as a sincere prayer of their heart. And I've sung in congregations and watched the tears flow down the eyes of people as they've sung, "God bless America. Land that I love." And as a little boy in grade school, many years ago now, we used to sing it at the opening of school, and I never sung it flippantly. But when I sung, God bless America, it was a prayer of my heart. God bless this country. And I think it's been the prayer of the hearts of millions and millions and millions. And the result has been, God has blessed America. The question is, why has God blessed America? And I'd answer it very quickly if I could by saying, God has blessed America because America's recognized God. A South American president was talking to Roger Babsom, and he said, South America was founded by men who were seeking gold, but North America was founded by men who were seeking God. Regardless as to what we think about the present, and in spite of what we sometimes see around us, this country was founded for religious reasons and not for political reasons. Men came to America to have religious freedom. And the United States Supreme Court has ruled that this is a Christian nation. It was founded upon Christian principles that are revealed in the Bible. The picture of Moses was upon the first coin that was minted in the United States of America. And today we still have on our money the grand old words, "In God we trust." I read the story. I don't know how much truth is to it, but they suggest they put "In God we trust" on the coin at a time when our economy was sagging. Abraham Lincoln was president and the economy went up. And then someone suggests we put "In God we trust" on our paper money. And Abraham Lincoln then suggested it might be more appropriate to put on our paper money, "Silver and gold have I none, but such as I have give I thee." And he's probably right about that. Our Pledge of Allegiance, we quoted a moment ago, says "One nation under God." Pericles built a civilization upon culture and it failed. Caesar built a civilization upon power and it failed. Our forefathers founded our nation upon the Christian religion. And America will live so long as the Lord is our God. When the pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock, they knelt upon the shore and thanked God for giving them this new country. The Church of Christ was at the center of every new settlement in this land. When the Continental Congress faced great problems and difficulties and knew not which way to turn, Benjamin Franklin called the members of the Congress to fall upon their knees and pray. We may have gotten away from it, but our nation was founded upon God and the Bible and right. The greatness of America, the God of America. I want to pause here and say that America still needs God today. We need God today in our government. I'm somewhat concerned that we pass laws that ban Bible reading and prayer in our public schools. I'm concerned about that. Especially when they won't allow you to read the Bible in grade school, and when a man gets in the penitentiary, they give him a Bible. It seems we got the thing a little backwards. I'd like to see us have Bible reading and prayer back in our schools. America needs God in its government. I'd rest easy at night if I knew that every congressman and senator, the president, the vice president, and all the other were born again, blood washed believers. I'd rest comfortably. I know that our president professed to be a born again Christian, to use his own language. He was our governor in Georgia. I do not know whether he's a born again Christian or not. I only hear what you have heard. I heard what he said. But you know, I'm excited about something. I'm excited to think that Americans would vote for a man who said he was born again, which indicates to me that the majority of Americans would like to have a president who's a born again believer. Whether they got one or not, I do not know. I'm not even here to debate that. But I believe with all my heart that 10 or 15 years ago, if a man had run for president and said, "I'm a born-again Christian," it would have hurt him. But it seemed to help Governor Carter when he ran for president. And the strange thing was, everybody else then who run for president began to check their family Bible, and one by one they began to say, you know, I think I'm a born-again Christian. Another one said, my mother told me I was baptized when I was a child. I believe I'm a born-again Christian. And everybody in Georgia who ran for anything, dog catcher on up, was a born-again Christian. It soon became popular, but I was encouraged to see the people go to the polls and vote for a man who said, I'm a born-again Christian. Whether they got one or not, I don't know, but I like what that indicated to me. That said to me that most people in America would like to have a man in office who's born again. This is a great country. It's a great country because we put God first, and we need God back in our government. I can't take a lot of time, but I want to say we ought to have God back in our schools. We ought to have God in our businesses in America. Some of the greatest businessmen who ever lived built their business off of Christian principles, including J.C. Penney. Get J.C. Penney's biography and read it, and he took that verse in the Bible, do unto others you'd have them do unto you, and he tried to practice that. And his business grew and grew and grew and grew and grew. I've heard men say, you just can't be a good businessman and be a Christian. I disagree with you. You can be a better businessman and be a Christian. Put Christian principles to work in your business, and they'll beget prosperity in your business. We need God back in our government. We need God back in our schools. We need God back in our businesses. We need God back in our homes. A man walking through Washington, D.C., pointed to the Capitol Dome and said to his friend, there is the heart of America. And a man overheard the statement and stopped and said, pardon me, but did I hear you say there is the heart of America? Yes, he said. He said, I beg to differ with you, sir. He said, that is not the heart of America. Why, he said, it is. It's the capital of the United States of America. That is the heart of America. He said, no, sir. He said, the heart of America is our Christian homes, where the Bible is read and where prayers are said. And the man is absolutely right. God has three institutions, a home, the church, and the government. And I think the home is God's greatest institution, and that is God's oldest and first institution. And as goes the home, so goes the church, and as goes the church, so goes the nation. But it all goes back to the Christian home. I'm encouraged when I travel across this country and have lunch with one family and then the other and see a Bible laying on the table, and you can tell it's been opened up very frequently. The pages are dirty and it's thicker than it normally would be if you bought it at the Bible store or bookstore. When I have fathers of Christian homes gather the family around and say, Dr. Hudson, would you pray for our home while you're here? And when I see them having family devotions at night and reading the Bible together, I'm encouraged. Man, if we can get fathers in this country to read the Bible and have family altar and pray with the family, there's hope for this old country. General Douglas MacArthur said, I don't want to be remembered as the great general who led the armies and liberated the people, but I want to be remembered as a Christian father who read the Bible and said the family prayers. We need God in our country. We need God in our government. We need God in our businesses. We need God in our schools. But we need God in our homes. I feel personally, though I've traveled up and down this country and preached thousands and thousands of sermons, and God allowed me to pastor the largest church in the state of Georgia with over 3,800 in Sunday school every Sunday morning. The last month I was pastor there. And 95 conversions or additions every week the last year I was pastor there. With everything God's allowed me the opportunity to do, I'd feel I had been a miserable failure if I didn't raise four good Christian children who live right. I personally feel that my children are my credentials in the ministry. Somebody said, you drag them to church every Sunday and every Sunday, and when they get old, they're all your own. Mine were born seemingly in church. And the neighbors used to say to me, "You drag those little old kids off to church every night." Well, the truth is, we never drug them off to church. Well, they rode in the car with us. But it sounded worse if they told me I drug them. My oldest daughter's 24 years old. She didn't get enough preaching. She married a preacher. My second daughter's 22 years old. She didn't get enough preaching. She married a preacher. My baby daughter's 9 years old. I have a son 15 years old. He's already surrendered to be a preacher and made it public in a church service. My daughter, baby's 9 years old, was going home a few months back, over a year before I was in the church. Little fellow in my church named Lee Taylor. His parents are deaf. Lee is about that tall, just a tiny little tot, had on a little white double-breasted suit and a little white Bible. He looked like a little preacher. His little arms looked no longer than that, and I always talked to his parents just to see Lee interpret and sign with his little hands and arms. He's so good with it. And so I said to him, "Lee, when you grow up, I want you to be a preacher. And I want you to preach to the hearing and sign to the deaf all the time you're preaching." He said, "Yes, sir, I am." And I said, "Lee, I want you to go home and have lunch with me one day." He walked away, and I spoke to some other folks. In a few minutes, he came back and pulled my coat tail, and he said, "Mama said I could go today." I said, "All right, Lee, you'll go today." My wife left early. We always took 2 cars to church so she'd get home and get lunch fixed. I enjoyed having lunch at home. I was gone so much. And so Lee Taylor and my son Tony, and just happened that Sunday my baby girl Kay, who was 9 years old, stayed over. And we rode home together, and I talked big man talk to Lee and to Tony. And I said, "Tony, now when you get grown, get your church, I want you to let Lee preach for you." He said, "Yes, sir, Daddy, I will." And I said, "Lee, I want you to let Tony preach for you." And he said, "Yes, sir, I will, Dr. Hudson." And it was Lee and Tony and Lee and Tony. My little girl was left out of the conversation. The moment she piped up and said, "Daddy, when I get married, are you going to let my husband preach in your church?" Well, I said, "Sweetheart, if you marry a preacher, sure I will." She said, "If he ain't no preacher, I ain't going to marry him." And all my young life, they said, "You drag those kids to church and drag those kids to church. And when they get old, they'll marry preachers." And my daughter's already said she won't get married if she can't marry a preacher. And my boy's already confessed the calling to preach. That's enough to make any Baptist preacher happy. The best way to get rid of drunks is quit raising them. The best way to get rid of alcoholics is quit raising them. Every dope addict on Skid Row once sat on a mother's lap, once sang a mother's songs, and once was fed by a mother's hand. Billy Sunday said, "If you want to hit the devil, don't hit him with a crutch, hit him with a cradle." And he's absolutely right about it. America needs God in her government, in her businesses, in her schools. And I'm leaving some of this out, but America needs God in our homes. Let's have some old-fashioned Christian homes where the blessing is said, where the presence of God is felt, where the Bible is read, and where the girls and boys hear Daddy pray. Anything more wonderful than that? Hilding Harbison, the great songmaster in Vancouver, said he was standing at the window and he heard one of these "My Dad Can Beat Your Dad" routines. One little guy said, "My dad knows the mayor." The other guy said, "That's nothing. My dad knows the governor." Then Hilding said, "I heard the voice of my own little boy as he spoke up and said, 'That's nothing, boys. My dad knows God.'" He said, "I closed the door lest he hear me cry, and I ran to my bedroom and fell on my knees and prayed, 'Oh God, help me to always live that my boy can say, my dad knows God.'" The greatness of America, the God of America, May I close by saying a few words about the guilt of America. We are guilty of a number of things in America. I think one thing we are guilty of is ingratitude. Dr. Bob Jones Sr. said, "The loveliest flower that grows in the garden of man's soul is gratitude. And when gratitude dies on the altar of a man's heart, he's well nigh gone." I don't know of anything worse than ingratitude. If you read Romans chapter 1, you'll find that homosexuality is a result of ingratitude. They were not thankful. When they knew God, they glorified Him not as God, neither were thankful. God gave them over to those things which were not convenient. I hope I never get to the place where I don't feel genuine gratitude in my heart. I think sometimes a poor upbringing's good for a person. We were poor. 5 kids, a 2-room house, so we slept in the kitchen. I was awakened many mornings with the bacon grease. I shouldn't say many mornings. We only had bacon 2 or 3 times a year. I call fatback bacon. But I was waking many mornings with the grease popping out on my face, or the grits boiling and the grits popping out and burning little blisters. Don't laugh. If you don't eat grits, you're not saved. You'll find that in the second book of Hominy, chapter 3. I had nothing. Nothing. And man, we'd buy a Baby Ruth for a nickel, and then it was as big as a 20-cent bar now. And I'd take one little bite off that Babe Ruth, and I'd wrap her up, man, put her in a cool spot. And I chewed and chewed and chewed and chewed and chewed and chewed. One bite, it took me a half a day to get it all chewed up and swallowed. And I go back and get another bite. I tell my son, I said, "Son, you don't even know what's in that candy. You swallow it. If you chew it a while, there's a lot of good things in there you've never discovered." And buy an old Pepsi Cola, take a swig out of it and put it in the ice box. That dates you. Not the refrigerator, the ice box. Up on top next to the old block of ice. Go back and get a little sip of it later, make it last 2 or 3 days. It got so flat, all its fizz was gone. We made it last. I had so little. We were poor as Job's turkey. Somebody said Job's turkey was so poor it had leaned up against a fence to gobble. We were poor. Our farm, we had 66-acre little old farm. All rocks. The ground was so poor, you had to stand on a sack of fertilizer to raise an umbrella. Poor, nothing. And God began to bless me. I remember the first house I had with inside bathroom. I thought, I'm rich. I'm rich. I remember the first restaurant I ever saw. My father was a barber in addition to having the little place. And one day I went to the barber shop with him. There's a restaurant next to the barber shop. And I sat there all day long looking through the window at people eating in the restaurant. And I thought everybody in there were millionaires. Only millionaires eat in restaurants. My first T-bone steak was at my junior-senior prom in high school. You said, "I didn't think you graduated." I said, "I have a high school diploma, didn't I? But only God and I knows how I got it." I ain't going to tell you how I got it. But anyway, my first T-bone steak, I didn't know what to do with it. I looked at it. I thought, "Is this for the whole family?" I mean, every time I saw a piece of meat that big, it's for the whole family. It's all on my plate. I didn't know what to do with it. I remember buying my first house, had carpet on the floor, had this big shag carpet. And I laid down in the middle of the night. My wife had gone to sleep. I went in the living room, laid down. I never seen carpet. I rubbed my hands through that carpet, big shag. I'd pull each loop up. Found myself thanking God for each individual loop. I'd put it down and pull the other one up. Thank God for it. Oh, you say you're crazy. I might have been crazy, but I felt good in my heart about it. We ought to be grateful. We take too many things for granted in our country. If you've been blessed with a fortune, thank God for it, but realize it's not yours.